All right, greeting everyone. It's good to see you all joining us here. And this is a beautiful day. It's September 5th, 2024. And this is Dr. Will Tuttle. This is our first Thursday of the month, World Peace Meditation via Zoom. So we'll go ahead and get started. Thank you, Lisa, for joining us and helping out with the co-hosting. And if anyone has any questions or problems, just go ahead and feel free to type into the chat. I can kind of see that. Or raise your hand down below under where it says React. You can do that as well. So it's just the top of the hour, 5 o'clock here in California, 8 o'clock in Eastern time zone. So I think, yeah, this is perfect. We're here in our home, so I've got the piano right here. And as those of you who have been here before know, that our basic flow is that I like to, we just do a meditation at the beginning. And you can feel free to have your cameras off on that. They can be on if you'd prefer, but either way. And then we open it up for any questions or comments or concerns you have. This first Thursday, we focus more on spiritual questions and issues and things. And maybe sometimes we read from the Dhammapada if we have time. We did last time a little bit. All right, so I'll go ahead and we can get started. I think it's just about time. And so please feel free to make yourselves comfortable as we turn our attention within. Become aware of our breathing. Knowing that through our breath, we connect with the vast atmosphere that connects us with the whole living web of life here on this beautiful earth, that every breath allows us to partake not only of the oxygen, but of the spirit. That pervades all life. Remembering that the ancient Latin word spirit means spiritus, means breath. Knowing that what we are is essentially infinite and eternal consciousness. So with every exhalation now, we allow ourselves to relax more deeply into this present moment, this holy moment. And we give thanks for every breath, for this beautiful physical vehicle that we have, to function and to serve and contribute on this earth. so we give thanks for every aspect of our life. We give thanks for every aspect of our past, knowing that all of our experiences have brought us right here to the being that we are right now. The perfection of being manifesting as we are awakening to the truth that we are more and more fully on this adventure of a human life . And so we give thanks now to the whole web of life that holds us and supports us, the source of that life, all the members, all the human beings on this earth, all the animals, the whole vast, intelligent web of life. The beauty, the abundance, the sacred, precious kaleidoscope of living beings, giving thanks that we have been given the gift of a physical body that thrives on foods that require no suffering on behalf of animals. We give thanks for all of our brothers and sisters who are doing their best to help raise awareness and raise the vibratory field of consciousness among humanity at this time. And we give thanks knowing that we have always in our heart a yearning to awaken to the truth that we are, for the benefit of all living beings, so that we have the wisdom to be part of the force for healing and nurturing and awakening, that we can act skillfully and lovingly, and not be deceived by the forces of delusion, and we give thanks for the inner guidance system, our spiritual intuition that shines always at the very core of our being, guiding us to unfold the beautiful and unique life that we are here and destined to fulfill. As we work together and cooperate, as we love and share with others, as we open to the compassion that we feel for all living beings, so now we slow down our mental and emotional processes and just come to a place of inner stillness. Connect with our heart. And now with every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of loving kindness, of benevolence and goodwill. And with every exhalation, now we join together and radiate love in all directions to all living beings. Breathing and radiating love through every living being, even those who may be difficult for us, sending them love also, knowing that every being has a part to play. And we send love especially to the unique and beautiful being that we are. Breathing and radiating love abiding in our true home abiding in love With every inhalation, now we engender in our heart the feeling of compassion, yearning that others be free from suffering, and yearning also to act to help relieve the suffering of others. So with every exhalation now, we radiate in ever-expanding spheres of light that flow forth from our heart, sending forth compassion to all living beings, knowing that compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere, breathing and radiating compassion, abiding in our true home of compassion, with every inhalation we engender in our heart the feeling of joy, the great joy that needs no reasons at all, the joy that is our true nature, the joy of savoring the beauty that is all around us here, the joy that we feel, and the joy of others. With every exhalation now, we allow this feeling of joy to radiate from our heart. just overflowing to all directions, breathing and radiating joy. May all beings be established in their true home of joy. Abiding in our true home of joy. And finally, now we connect with the feeling of peace and harmony that is always at the core of our being, the peace that comes when we radiate love, compassion, and joy. We are at peace. We are in touch with our oneness with the infinite love that is the source of all life. So with every exhalation now, we radiate peace in every direction. Breathing and radiating peace. May all beings be at peace and free and happy. And we see the whole earth bathed in the light of peace. The reality underlying all the apparent outer appearances is peace. Abiding in our true home of peace. So now we begin to bring our meditation to a close, abiding in our true home, abiding in love, abiding in compassion, abiding in joy. Abiding in peace, breathing and radiating love, breathing and radiating compassion, breathing and radiating joy, breathing and radiating peace. Love, compassion, joy, and peace. And so now we give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have to be together here in consciousness, knowing that we are an integral part of the awakening of human consciousness during these critical times for the benefit of all beings of the past, present, and future. We go forth now into our lives, established in the truth of being. We give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. Thank you. Okay, thank you again, everyone, for joining in our time of meditation. It's wonderful to see you all here joining us. So those of you who came in late during the meditation, here we are. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and Madeline and I are getting ready for our big tour in November. We have a smaller tour in October coming up. I think from about October, 11th to the 21st, something like that. We're going to do some events in Mount Shasta and in Eugene and in Florence, Oregon, and in Portland, and then up to Squim, and then up to Victoria, British Columbia, and then back to the Seattle area, Bremerton, and then down to Brighton Bush Hot Springs, actually, and then, let me think here, then to Bend, Oregon, and then to Roseburg, Oregon, and then down to Ashland, Oregon, and then back home. So that's pretty much all set up. And we just had a really wonderful lecture in Chico a few days ago, and also the Unity Church on Sunday. And we did a workshop, actually, in the afternoon on the four Viharas. So what the meditation that we just did toward the end, that was the four Viharas. It's called Viharas, an old Sanskrit word that means abode. The four aspects of our true home: love, compassion, joy, and peace. In Sanskrit, it's mudita, karuna. Excuse me, it's maitri, karuna, mudita, upeka. And it's a whole kind of a lot to talk about with that, but it's probably, in some ways, you could perhaps even say that it's one of the very oldest, if not the oldest, continually practiced meditation that we know of on planet Earth. It goes way back. I mean, to the time of the Buddha, which was 2,500 years ago, it was already well established and it was taught then. And we don't have a lot of writings that go much farther back. We have some, but it goes back even before. So anyway, it's meaningful to connect with the current of energy that's established in human beings making an effort to connect with these energies of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and peace, harmony. And the word upeka, it also has a tendency to mean, it doesn't have an exact translation, but detachment, or that kind of thing, being able to be free of the mental conflicts that we have when we are attached to outcomes and have desires that we want to have happen, and so forth. So there's that upeka, has that feeling of inner peace that transcends the whether I get what I want or don't get what I want, that kind of thing. It's kind of connected to that idea I've talked about before of the eight winds. You know, the eight worldly winds. These are the winds that blow through our life that make us typically upset one way or the other. And they're the two pairs of opposites: praise and blame, pain and pleasure, fame and infamy, and the other one is happiness and sorrow, something like that. Anyway, these four things that we're always trying to get one and keep away the other. And first of all, so before we go on, we've had a wonderful month since the last time we had our meditation. If anyone has a particular dilemma or something you'd like to share, a victory or something like that, whatever, it's fine. This is not just me talking without anyone else having the possibility. So just feel free to raise your hand through the reaction at the bottom if you have that, or press star 6 or unmute yourself, and I'm happy to respond to any questions. Again, this is not so much for intense political things. That's more for the third Thursday gathering that we have, and that's only for World Peace Diet facilitators. But this is pretty much open. So if anyone has anything, just feel free to ask. And otherwise, we're delighted to share some insights and thoughts, and I'm also happy to contemplate the Dhammapada again. But I think one of the things that I've been thinking about, and Madeline and I have been talking about as well, and I think you all are aware of this also, is the sort of the intersection of spirituality and daily life, and especially the shared life that we have together, the political, social, political, cultural realm, and the conflicts that seem to be building about all kind, everything. And how do we navigate that? Do we just so I know quite a few people actually who say, well, that's all just a big clown show, and I don't pay attention. I just really don't care what happens. I don't care who wins the election. I don't care. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's all one party, and they're controlling everything. And so I'm just going to ignore all that and enjoy my life. And of course, there's suffering going on in the world, as we know, and there's also forces that are in that are manipulating things. And so the question comes up, each one of us as individuals, we have, or I guess the question is to, what is our responsibility in being a positive force in the larger world? Is it simply to vote with our dollars and go be vegan and not vote for meat, dairy, and eggs and wool, silk, and leather and all these things, and then do the best we can to share with other people the multiple benefits of transitioning to a compassionate way of eating and living, and then meditating and sending light and love out into the infinite web of relations to try to raise awareness? I mean, I think these are all really actually very helpful things to do. And I think one of the things that Madeline and I have been talking about, and we've talked about it here before too, is that ultimately everything begins with consciousness. And so even though the outer world that we see, the world of this world of appearance, which in a lot of the Eastern traditions is considered Maya or considers somewhat illusory, it nevertheless, it has an impact on us. That's my feeling. I mean, we really, I think, need to defend our freedoms, because without basic freedom, it's very difficult to make any spiritual progress. I remember when I was younger and I lived in the Tibetan Buddhist Meditation Center in San Francisco, and I was pretty involved with the Tibetans, that would come over from India. And we had a lama, Lama Lodru, who lived with us. And then all these lamas would come over from India. And they were basically refugees. They had escaped from China. And they talked about how precious freedom is. Without freedom, it's very difficult to practice. It can be very difficult. There's situations that the Tibetan lamas found themselves in if they were unfortunate enough to be taken over by the Chinese in their monasteries, where they were just thrown in prison, and they were not they, they really had a very hard time meditating because of the conditions. There was a lot of brutality against these people. They were not respected. Their Buddhism itself was not respected, and meditation wasn't respected. And so the guards and the system would do whatever they could to keep them uncomfortable and distracted all the time. So it was very difficult to meditate, and and they had dedicated their lives to that. They were monks, monks and nuns. So I remember the Dalai Lama was talking to one of these monks had finally, after quite a few years, had managed to either escape or be released, something he got out, and he made his way to India, and he was having a he was talking to the Dalai Lama, and the Dalai Lama said, "So, tell me about your experience." And he said, "Oh, it was really very, very difficult, very, very painful." And he said, "At one point, Your Holiness, I almost did the worst possible thing." And the Dalai Lama said, "Well, what was that?" He said, "I almost lost my compassion for these people." And I remember being so touched when I heard that, because he was really practicing, even in the difficulties of what he was experiencing, practicing compassion for the people that were physically and mentally abusing him out of their ignorance, really. And so he managed to keep it together somewhat, but I know some had a harder time doing that. And it was interesting because I also remember when we were doing a long retreat, we did an 18-day very intense retreat where we did air fasting every other day. So every other day there was no water, no food. It was pretty intense to do air fasting for 24 hours every other day for 18 days. But I remember at the very end, we learned an advanced practice, the yoga of consciousness transference. And so we were taught how to raise our consciousness out of our body, to sort of just to go out, to kind of go out of, to leave, basically. And I remember that Lama Lodru telling us that when the Chinese came in and they were going to take the monks and take them off to prison and torture them, that the older monks who had mastered this technique, they just left. So suddenly the Chinese soldiers, all they had were these corpses in their hands, because they just left. They said, "Well, okay, we're not going to go through that. I already had a good life." And the younger monks were not able to just leave their body, so they had to endure the consequences. But of course, in the Buddhist tradition, and I think really not every tradition, but many traditions, there's always this underlying idea that whatever we sow, we reap, and that those who are committing violence and abuse in one life, they experience it, they will for sure experience it. And so those who are sort of, we can't figure out why are these poor people suffering so much, or why are they experiencing so much suffering. And from the Buddhist point of view, it's some kind of there's a reason for it. And I think there's a underlying sense of, in the big picture, we are here to learn. And in the even bigger picture, of course, there's only spirit. I mean, there's only consciousness. And that, I think, is something that's very helpful for spiritual healing and for really making progress on the spiritual path, is to more and more be able to look beyond the outer appearance to the essential reality, in which there is fundamentally no separate individual self. And we have this idea, always have this idea, that we're a fundamentally separate self, this thing that was born and will die, or this thing that is incarnating and so forth. And really, I think as we go deeper in meditation, we begin to realize that it goes beyond words. But what we are is this eternal consciousness, and we're here. We seem to be here, functioning and living our lives, and but that essentially we are non-corporeal. Essentially we are not a body, and it's hard to imagine, like, what am I without this body? What is it? If I didn't have this body, what would I be? We think we wouldn't be anything, and yet we know that there's a deep truth, because when we look at a cow or a pig or a chicken, if we just see the body, then we don't mind. I mean, for a lot of people, they just say, "Well, I'm going to kill that animal. It's just a thing, and eat it." And but when we see the being in there, then compassion is born, and wisdom is born. And it's the same thing, I think, on a deeper level with our own reality. When we realize that what we are is not this small little self that we take ourselves to be, and we realize that we're something far greater. But it's an open question to just dive into that. What is that? And is it what it's not a thing, but we can perhaps connect with that, and it's liberating in the sense that we begin to see that in others as well. And instead of judging or criticizing or complaining about them, we understand that everyone's is this eternal self, but we have been wounded growing up, and we do all these things because we've been programmed by our society. So it's this kind of, I think, this kind of understanding that can help us to not be so disturbed when we see the tyrannical forces that are in many ways being unleashed on the earth right now. And to reconnect, keep our connection not only with the beautiful earth, and take time, I really recommend, if you can, take time every day to savor the beauty of nature somehow. It's there. Even if you're in a city, maybe look in the corner, you'll see a little spider in a spider web, We can see the beauty there. But most of us are fortunate enough that we can look out and we can see hills and mountains and trees and flowers and birds and so forth. And take time to savor that, because we will never really protect what we don't love and appreciate. So to really love and appreciate the natural world, and then to take time to really question not only the outer narratives that we are being bombarded with, which are so toxic, but the inner narratives about everything. Because so much of what we think we know is true, we find out later it isn't true. I mean, I'm learning stuff all the time. Just for example, the other day reading, I hadn't really heard that before, but I started to read like the atomic bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, those two atomic bombs and nuclear bombs. There's quite a bit of evidence that they were not nuclear bombs. They were just conventional. There wasn't actually never, we've never actually used nuclear bombs. Humanity's never used them. And people that were there and writing about it at the time said, yeah, it was severe bombing, but it wasn't nuclear. So, I mean, there's endless things like that we think we know because we've been told it, but we weren't there, And so it's good to just keep an open mind about things, I think. There was a few hands up. See, Kim Dong says, I have a question. Okay, go right ahead, Kim.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Dr. Turtle. My name is Kim, and I was invited by Lisa, Sister Lisa. So I really appreciate Lisa and Dr. Turtle and everyone being here today. Thank you so much. My question, Dr. Turtle, is that you touched the aspect of karma, and I've been, kind of like struggling with that, understanding the concept. So let's say, a person is hurting. Let's say person A hurts the person B. And we say, well, you're going to create karma, and say the person A doesn't react to it and just walk away and say, hey, I send you love, brother, I wish you well, and then just walk away. And so now we're saying, well, person B is going to get karma, right? But what if, because we believe in reincarnation, right? What if that person B did something to person A before? So now A is just paying back, right? So I don't know. I'm just asking a question. I'm just, because
Oh, yeah.
I always throw that hypothetical, questions out there. I'm a notary, so I just met a client last week, and poor girl's beautiful, beautiful soul. They have a 10-year-old daughter together. And this couple, they're legally divorced, but she was staying in the house, and they just got divorced legally. And then she said, well, oh my gosh, and I've got to get out of here. I got to move. So she ended up move by she bought another house. So the house that she was staying with the ex and the daughter, they bought the house together. So her name is actually on the deed of trust. But he was telling me, it wouldn't mean her, that Hey, August 31st, you gotta get the SL out of here. But Jason, oh my God. But my loan, new loan's gonna not gonna close until October the 3rd, which is the past month, Tuesday. He said, no. I'm gonna call the cops and I'm gonna toss your clothes, all your belongings out to the front and all that. And she was talking to me. She was very fearful. I said, no, Don. I mean, you illegally, half of the house is yours. So he didn't even help pay, like buy her out on the house that he's staying that they bought together, but wanted to kick her out anyway. So I was telling Don. I said, Don. So there's two things. And she's very spiritual as well. I said, so it could be that you could be the end of your assignment. You owe him before, so now you're just paying back. You're done. The karma is over. And if you didn't have any contract with him before, there was no karma, and now he's creating karma. So was I right by sharing that? That's my question.
Right. Well, I think in that case, and in cases in general, we live in a world where we see everything through the lens of being this fundamentally separate self, where we're trying to manipulate the situation so that it's best for us, best for me, or best for me and my daughter, or best for maybe my family, but against that family, or my nation, but against that nation, or it's always this sense of being in a somewhat adversarial relationship with the world, and that's based on delusion. So from the Buddhist point of view, it's why samsara, this is the world of delusion, is considered without end. It never ends. I mean, no beginning and no end. And so it doesn't really matter who's right and who's wrong in the sense. I mean, he's doing this, he's creating karma by threatening to throw out on the street, and who knows what she did earlier to bring that on. I mean, probably all kinds of little things. And then you can say, and then former lifetimes and so forth, and then it gets really complicated. So the whole idea really is to just cut it off at the root. And that's why on the spiritual path, there's this idea, I've mentioned it before, the idea of diligence, or of just saying, I'm gonna focus and work hard. And we're taught in our society to focus and work hard to get ahead, right? To have ambition and to make more money and to get what we want. And the thing is that desire for material success or material recognition, it never actually satisfies us. And so we're suffering. And even if we're very wealthy and have lots of money and so forth, we're still suffering. So it's that suffering that is the karma, actually. It's the we do things that cause suffering to others, and it always is going to come back to us. It for sure will. And it's that suffering that really is our good friend, because that suffering helps us to focus. We learn. It's like that we are going to redirect our desire or redirect our yearning to a higher, to something higher. And what is that? That's when what's called in the Buddhist tradition bodhicitta, which means the mind of enlightenment. Okay, instead of trying to get more money and have everybody love me or whatever it is I usually want, I'm going to try to attain enlightenment, or I'm going to try to escape the round of birth and death. I'm going to, or I guess in a Christian point of view, I'm going to surrender to the divine within and live my life as an expression of divine love. But it's a yearning that's no longer self-centered. And when that happens, that's when karma, so-called karma, begins to diminish, in the sense that we're no longer creating karma because we're no longer focused on being a separate self trying to get what we want. In Chinese, in Taoism, that's called wu wei. Wu wei. Wei means to act, and wu means no or not. So it's like not acting. But it doesn't mean you sit around and don't do anything. What it means is you're acting, but you don't have any separate self in it. You're not trying to assert an agenda. And you're basically fulfilling the inner wisdom that is being born in you. So this is really the idea behind spiritual practice, is to live a life that from the outer world it looks like you're being very good, you know, you're being honest and friendly and kind and loving, but from the inner point of view, you're not trying to be good necessarily. You're just seeing that all beings are my brothers and sisters. I'm not, if to hurt them would be to hurt myself. To throw her out would be to throw myself out, right? But if someone's not at that stage, then they do all these things. And so that's why the great saints, usually they very often, and it's hard to do, it's hard to allow ourselves to be treated unjustly. That's the one thing the ego hates more than anything, is to be unjustly treated or to be blamed for something that I didn't do that, but to be just willing to to be mistreated, because one realizes, and in the Kagyu Tibetan Buddhist tradition, they call it the mishap lineage or the accident lineage, because the idea is, now I'm really focusing on spiritual enlightenment. So all of the bad things, in a sense, all of the unskillful actions I did in former lifetimes, they're going to ripen much more quickly. And now all of a sudden I'm going to get sued by people. I'm going to get, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. But they say all the bad things that happen, celebrate and rejoice, because you're just burning up old karma faster than ever because you're working hard. That idea. So if someone mistreats me, I can say, this is great. I'm actually at somewhere along the line, I did the same thing to them. So I'm just going to bow and be grateful for the opportunity to just totally forgive the situation and so forth. And so there is that aspect to the whole thing of understanding the bigger picture. And I think, it's one of those things. Like I told this story when we did the Four Viharas practice, because it kind of touches on it. I'll just say it briefly. When I was a Zen monk in Korea, there was two sanghas. There was two communities. One was just the Koreans. The other one was the foreign monks. That was me. I was from the United States. There were some monks from England. There were some from Denmark, some from Germany, some from Sri Lanka, Singapore. Anyway, so we had our own meditation hall, and we did the same practice. It was all the same. It was just there was too many, so we had two different meditation halls. But what was interesting was that the women, the lay women in the area, they really liked to support the monks, and so occasionally, not very often, maybe once a month, one of these women would make a gift to all of us monks of a piece. We'd all get a piece of cake, and it was very rigorous. We only got breakfast at 6 a.m. and lunch at noon, and there was no food after that, and it was just rice and soup. It was just a very strict. We would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and start meditating till 9 o'clock at night. And so to get a piece of cake was kind of like this big deal. Like, wow, I got a piece of cake, And they would give that just to the foreign monks, because most of the foreign monks, like these Europeans, they're just eating rice and all the time, every meal was rice. So I remember everybody got a piece of cake, and it was right, I guess before lunch, and so I didn't eat mine. I decided, I'll have it a little later. And I had my own private little locker. I put it in there, and I was doing besides the regular meditation practice, I was doing about an hour a day. I was doing the four viharas practice, where you love, compassion, joy, and peace. And the joy, usually think of the joy and the joy of others. So I was just doing that. So anyway, so I went back later, I think the next day, to get my cake. I thought, I'm going to eat my little piece of cake. And the cake was gone. And, one of the brother monks had stolen it. And so, it was a case of injustice, right? Oh, my gosh, lucky. But the funny thing was that since I was doing the Four Viharas, it was like my mind just automatically went to this thought of, this mysterious, I didn't know who it was, one of the other monks had eaten his cake, and then he had eaten, and how good that must have been, and then he ate my cake too. And I just thought, wow, that must have been fantastic. He got one, he got two, that must have been so great. And so all I could do was just imagine how great that must have been for him. And I was so happy that he had, it was just like, wow, that's so cool. I enjoyed it much more than I would have if I had just eaten it myself, quite honestly. And so I didn't have any feeling of wanting to tell the abbot, that we got a dishonest monk around here, or whatever, a greedy monk, or I have no desire to do that. It was like, it's fine. But I remember telling this story once to some Unitarians, and they were really angry with me. They said, "You should have gotten justice for yourself. You should have done something. You shouldn't have allowed that to happen. That was wrong." And I just thought, maybe on some level, we have to stick up and defend ourselves or whatever. But on the other hand, we want accountability, and we and but I think, the universe is the universe holds everybody accountable sooner or later, in this life or the next. It's accountability. And I think our job is to awaken spiritually to the truth that we are, and see beyond the outer form to the noumen. What can you say? The non-corporeal reality, the eternal reality that every being is. And when we see that, we're less subject to all this emotional turmoil that causes our minds to be constantly churning around and upset. And then we can meditate better. When we can meditate better, we're more at peace. We're not trying to manipulate others. And when we can meditate better and go deeper, then we can actually realize what we're, these truths directly. So they're not just intellectual. They actually become something we really feel. And our life goes by quickly, so it's important not to waste time, right? It's important to try to use every moment if possible. Like in Christianity, they say we should pray without ceasing, right? That's like, wow, like every second. Just but pray means just to be open and feel our oneness with the source of our life, the which is non-corporeal. It's not bodily, it's spiritual, it's eternal, it's eternal consciousness. That's our true nature. These are just words, but when we actually are living from that place, I think that's when we can actually make a more positive contribution to the world than when we're trying to balance everything out and figure out what we should do in situations. So, yeah, there's karma. I mean, as long as we're a separate self, we will be creating karma. And it's very, very dangerous, I think. I mean, this is a traditional teaching too, to sort of minimize that, to say, oh, well, I've reached a state where I'm beyond karma, or something like that. I mean, or to think that the suffering we cause others is not that big of a deal. Like some people say that, they say, well, you vegans, you can be vegan if you want, but that's kind of a lower path. I'm on a higher path. I know that it's one life everywhere. Life lives on life. So if you eat a carrot and I eat a cow, it's all the same thing. It's life. It's, I'm very spiritual. I'm more spiritual than you are. I see that. I see the one life in all. And this is pretty rampant, especially in New Age circles, where people have this idea that caring about animals is kind of dualistic, or it's you have this sense of being dividing and caring in this kind of narrow way, good and evil. Well, I'm beyond good and evil. It's just how we are. We just do this. We just eat animals because that's what everybody does. And so I think, again, that this is a very dangerous situation for the person. Because we're making a lot of karma. I mean, we are, whether people know it or not. And to harm other living beings, including birds and mammals and fishes, causing them suffering unnecessarily, even if we don't have the intention. I mean, people say, well, I don't have the intention to cause suffering. I just need to eat lunch, and so I'm having a burger. But the fact is, we are consciously paying someone to kill animals and we're eating them, and we should know better. I mean, we're not that stupid that we can't see what we're doing. We maybe don't think that we want to harm them, but we are, and we don't have to, and we could make a better choice. And so I think that's one of the main reasons there is so much disease and suffering and conflict in the world, is this massive karma that humans are creating constantly through this massive violence towards animals. We create wars and just endless conflict because of that. And I think a lot of spiritual teachers are really leading people astray by downplaying that and saying that's not a big thing. Don't worry about it. You can eat whatever you want. There's a real serious mistake, and they are going to have maybe even a lot more heavy karma because they're telling lots of people that violence towards animals is okay. I mean, that's not that's not a good thing, because they may, who knows what happens, but sometimes people say, well, why are there all these cows suffering so much and pigs and chickens? Yeah, I mean, who are they? Maybe they are people that said it doesn't matter if you if you kill cows and pigs and chickens, they're experiencing it. So it's all temporary, but still the suffering itself is very real while it's happening. So the whole idea is to cultivate wisdom, which is to really do our best to discriminate and not create that kind of violent karma. But the other thing I should just say is that if we do wake up, I mean, if we do bad, a lot of suffering, cause suffering to others, we can still wake up in this lifetime and liberate us and free ourselves from that karma. There's lots of stories, like the story of Angulimala, who was this terrible guy. He would kill people, and he had a bunch of skulls he carried around of all the people he had killed. And he came into a village in India, and everybody was terrified, and they all ran away. But the Buddha walked in, and Angulimala walked up to him like he was going to kill him. And the Buddha just looked at him like without any fear at all. And Angulimala had his sword, and he said, "I'm ready to kill you." And the Buddha said, "Why would you do that?" And, "Because I love to kill, And so the presence of the Buddha completely disarmed him. And the story is that he bowed down at the feet of this guy, and he gave up all his killing. He shaved his head, became a monk, and that at the end of his life he attained enlightenment. So he really completely transformed his life through his awakening. So the underlying idea is that if we realize, and then we completely stop, and we focus 100%, because he was really diligent. Milarepa is the same way. He'd killed a lot of people, and he worked so hard to attain enlightenment, and he attained a very high level enlightenment. Because he was really motivated. He thought, "Oh no, I did a lot of bad things. I better attain enlightenment." And so it all comes back really to diligence, to how serious we really are about the spiritual path, and what's the most important thing, and for us, what is it? What is the most important thing? I kind of went a long time on that, but Anne, go ahead. We only have 5 minutes left, so I hope that helped, Kim. I only have like 2 minutes. Sorry.
Well, thank you, doctor.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Kim. Yeah, I just realized Madeline just reminded me. It's actually I misread the clock. So yeah, Anne, did you want to say something?
Yes, I just wanted to say something about how I've been trying to kind of prick the consciences of some yoga practitioners,
Right.
regarding the nonviolence. And a teacher that I've been so inspired by recently, his name is Dharma Mitra, and he is now 85. And if anybody who has practiced yoga in many yoga studios, not all, there is this huge poster of a man who has done 908 different yoga poses and photographed himself. It is such an inspiring, I mean, I wish I had the image I could just put up right
Yeah, I've
now.
seen that. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
It's so inspiring. And he did this when there was no technology. And from what I've learned, he would take the picture of himself and in these difficult poses and only include it if he were in a state of love to God while he was posing. So anyway, I was amazed to learn that he is alive and well and actively running a yoga studio in Manhattan, the Dharma Yoga Center. And also to see and just verify, just like I found this on YouTube, and I also purchased or rented a couple of classes that he teaches. And he is right out front about we are not to be eating animals.
Right.
And, you know, speaking very directly to people about this, yes, we all have compassion for our pets, but our compassion
yeah.
needs to be on that. So he's really out there trying to help people make that connection. So he's just somebody to be aware of, such an
yeah.
inspiring man who is actively working right now.
Right. Thanks, Ann. Yeah, Dharma Mitra. Yeah, just to let you know, I've heard of him and he's fantastic. And I wanted to let everybody know, since you brought that up, that very soon, on September 21st, which is a Saturday, we're actually putting on an online summit on yoga, veganism, and spirituality. And we have six people who will be presenting who are yoga teachers.
And will Sharon Gannon will be there?
Yeah, Sharon Gannon, you know, I just found out from her partner, David Life, that she cannot be one of them. She was going to be one of the six, but she's very ill, he said. So she's not able to attend. She's not able to join us, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But Dr. Gabriel Cousins will be one of them. And Angel Honig, who is a World Peace Diet facilitator, will be one. And a yoga teacher from India. And also we'll have a yoga, well, Kip, either Kip or Cam with Christspiracy. And this other woman who's a yoga teacher from New York City. I can't remember her name, but we invited her too. So anyway, so that'll be coming up. I'll let everybody know. And we're trying to get the word out there that yoga should be a vegan practice for sure. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So we're a little bit past our time. We try to keep this to an hour, and I like to be honor everybody's time. But we will have our third Thursday in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks from today, and on the 19th. So here's Madeline, and let's let's go ahead and unmute your microphones, please. I apologize if I wasn't able to get to all the questions that people had here. And let's say our prayer that we always say that's based on our worldwide prayer circle for animals and begins with the word compassion. Oh, here's Judy. Hi, Judy. Okay, here we go. Let's say it together.
Compassion
encircles the earth all beings,
everywhere.
Good, again.
Compassion encircles the earth all beings,
everywhere. Thank you. Okay, one more time. With feeling.
Compassion
encircles
the earth
all beings, everywhere. All right. Much love to you all. Good to see you.
Thank
love you.
You.
And look forward to seeing you on our next tour. All right.
Thank you, Dr. Toto. Thank you, everyone. Thank you,
Thank
Lisa.
you. Shalom.
Thank you, Kim.
Aloha.
Thank you for coming.
Love, light, and
Talk
blessings,
about Paul McCartney's video.
Hi, Marty.
Yes, thanks, Kenny. Yeah, that's a great video. Yeah. All right, we'll see you next time. Much love.
Thank
you. Adios.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Aloha.
Aloha.